Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies. I talk about the things that worked for me, but also those big epic fails that I've made along the way. And I share interviews with experts because I'm also on this learning journey. And it's all because I believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. I often talk about this notion of, the ladder has become a maze. You know, for years, we've heard this idea that you know, work hard at school, go to college, and then graduate and climb the corporate ladder. But the ladder has become a maze. And so we often talk about what do students need in order to navigate this maze? And one of the things is deeper learning, which is a topic I'm gonna explore in my upcoming book, The Depth Advantage. It's all about deeper learning in an age of distractions or in a distracted world. And today we're gonna focus specifically on this idea of, you know, what does it look like to use AI tools for deeper learning? So we often hear about AI and student cheating, about academic integrity, but we're gonna focus on the question, all right, so that's a possibility, but what does it look like for students to use these tools that actually leads to deeper conceptual understanding and deeper knowledge and better skill development? So that's what we're talking about today. So I wanna start this podcast by talking about something from a long, long time ago, and it is when I did a project way back in the eighth grade. So I created this slide presentation and it had recorded audio, and it was just basically me presenting to a group of people with slides and audio. It doesn't sound like that big a deal, but just hear me out. Every part of it was laborious. Research involved card catalogs, books, and navigating the dark art of microfilm and microfiche. When I interviewed experts, I had to keep a stopwatch to see how much money I was spending per minute on long-distance phone calls. Making a single slide involved getting adequate lighting, making sure the spacing was perfect, then snapping a picture on a camera. Once the film roll was complete, I would then take it to the drugstore and have this amazingly cylindrical scoop of Thrifty's ice cream. If you ever grew up in the West Coast, you would know what I'm talking about. And then I'd have to wait a week. And a week later, I would get my slides back. I would see if they were developed. And that's how the slides were done. I recorded my script on this giant reel-to-reel magnetic tape, and editing it involved a razor blade and scotch tape. So now, years later, I draw my slides and I color them on Photoshop. If you've ever seen me give a keynote or attended one of my workshops, you'll see I love to draw. I make these little sketch videos that you can see at spinzervideos.com. That's my style. If I need to use an image, I pull from a library of free photos, or I just use some free photos or that I've actually, I guess, paid for with Envato. So they're not free, they're library photos. I record my audio like I'm doing right now in my office with just this Rode mic and a computer. I interview experts on Zoom like I did last week, and I look through journal articles by using ConsenSys first, followed by Google Scholar. Everything about the process, the creative process, has become faster and way more efficient. And so now, as we think about this era of generative AI, it's easy to see just how fast and efficient the learning process has become in terms of where we are now. And where we will go in the future is going to be even faster, right? So we're just at the cusp of this. We'll get instant answers, targeted tutoring, quality feedback in seconds. I've already seen how students can use AI tools to fix audio issues and create jump cuts for videos. But I think it's really important to recognize that there's a potential cost here. If we aren't careful, we can fall into cognitive atrophy. And this is where we allow the algorithms to do the thinking for us. Look, I struggle with spatial reasoning because I've allowed the map app on my phone to do all the navigation for me. I worry about the same thing that it might occur when students are using AI as the starting place for their writing. So for example, you know, what happens if they just always use generative AI as their first draft and they modify that? And that's especially true given the fact that sometimes we learn through writing rather than writing after we're done learning. And if we're not careful, students can end up using AI to engage in cursory, shallow approaches that lead to this cognitive atrophy. However, we can also use these tools in a way that leads to deeper mastery. So I want to highlight 10 different ways that we can do this. And I want to mention that, you know, some of these are going to be more like using AI as a tutor. Some of them, it's more like a thought partner. In other moments, AI functions almost like a simulator. And I want to point out that each example I'm giving has a varying level of success. So some of these strategies are phenomenal. Some of these strategies are kind of like just beginning to work, and they take a lot of prompt engineering and massaging, but they'll be there within the next 6 months to a year. So I want to highlight those now. And I'm going to walk through this pretty quickly. And I just want to say that if you want to take a deeper dive into this, there is an article that corresponds to this podcast episode. You can go to spencereducation.com, click over on the article catalog or articles tab, catalog, geez. Go to the articles tab, and then you'll notice the very first one is going to have the same title as this blog post or this podcast. It's going to say 10 ways to use AI for deeper learning and mastery, and that's what you're going to go for. But I'm just going to briefly mention all 10 of these. So number one is slow down with prompt engineering. So this is the idea of using the facts cycle to slow the process down. It's formulate the question, acquire the AI tool, create context. This is where you give it a raft. You say the role that you're talking to, the audience, the format, the tone, and often you'll use the temperature as well. Then you type the prompt, scrutinize the results, and you move through it slower and more So that's a basic way of slowing the process down. Often students are just way too quick to believe everything the AI says, and so that's a great approach to say, all right, let's slow it down and make sure that we're actually engaging in deeper, thoughtful prompt engineering. Strategy number two is using AI as a deep conceptual study tool. So I'm gonna walk you through how this works. Step one is you make and this would be directions for your students. So step one, make a quick cursory read of your work from the last week, the unit, semester, whatever it may be. And you fill out a T-chart that's basically what I know and what I don't know. A variation might be that you use a standard-based grid to identify your mastery levels. Step two is train a chatbot on your current work. It can help to use a custom chatbot, but basic generative AI tools like Gemini, ChatGPT, Copilot, Claude, any of those will work. Again, make sure if it's students that they have the permission to use it. That's really, really important. And make sure that it is COPPA, SIPA, et cetera, compliant. And so if it comes to, you know, a prompt, you would say something along the lines of, I am a grade blank student. I am learning about blank. I would like you to review blank and look for trends in what I know and don't know. Put it into an easy to understand T-chart. A variation would be, you know, the current standards we are learning about are blank. I will be submitting the standards-based assessment grid, fill out the chart with my mastery level, etc. Step three is that you review the AI report of what you know and what you don't know. And then step four is that you're going to compare and contrast. What are some similarities and differences between your T-chart and the AI tool T-chart? What are some things that identified that you missed? What do you agree with? What do you disagree with? Then you select one key concept or learning target that you have not mastered and you use the prompt, you know, I would like you to create, and then you qualify the number of paragraphs, informational text about blank. Explain it to me in simple terms, or option might be explain it to me like I'm blank years old. The tone should be blank, and you specify the tone, academic but engaging, for example. And then be sure to keep a low temperature to focus on accuracy. Be sure to include front-loaded, easy-to-understand content vocabulary at the top of the informational text. So you're telling it exactly what you're looking for. And again, putting in the word please is going to give you more accurate answers as well, or better, more helpful answers. So keep that in mind. Using polite language always helps with AI because of the training data that it's based on. Step 6, take handwritten notes on key ideas. And then step 7, use the chatbot to ask clarifying questions to build your background knowledge based on any part of the information you don't understand. And then when that's done, ask the AI to test you on what you just learned. An optional prompt would be, you know, create a series of multiple choice tests that I will answer one at a time. It should progress from basic to more advanced as I get the answers correct. Each time I get the answers correct or incorrect, please explain the correct answer and why I got it wrong, right? And so then you're moving through that process. Handwrite a summary of what you've learned when you're done. And then you repeat steps 5 through 9 on additional days with a focus on 30 to 45 minutes of study time. When you move to step 8, you might also ask it to test you on information from previous days. So the goal of really what you're going for is using the tech for deeper learning, deeper conceptual understanding. Strategy number 3 is concept map comparison. You draw a concept map, you ask the AI for a concept map, and then you compare and contrast. Concept maps are still not great. They're pretty impressive. Like I've actually been kind of impressed with how good they've gotten. I've been testing it like once every 2 weeks or so to just see the improvements. And most AI tools are really improving in this area. You look for trends, connections, and then you can also ask the AI to analyze your concept map to see what misconceptions you have, what connections you might be missing, what details you might want to add, so on and so forth. Strategy number 4 is probably the most emerging. It's not great yet, but it's using AI as a Socratic study tool. And so you basically create the prompt where you say, you know, I want you to pretend to be 3 different AI, take on the role of 3 different experts, 3 different people. We're going to have a Socratic seminar. It's going to be open-ended. You're going to respond to each other. You're going to respond to me. The problem in general is, although we're getting close to that, we're still not there. And what we often see is this sort of like panel discussion rather than true Socratic seminar. And I think it just struggles with, you know, who's going to say what first and how it's going to work. I think if you trained AI on examples, scripts of Socratic seminars, it might do a better job. But also, it's just going to get significantly better with Socratic seminars as time goes on. But a variation of this is actually to take multiple sources that you have and to use a tool like Notebook LM, drop in those articles and have it create a podcast for you that you can then interrupt. So one of the things I love about Notebook LM is it will generate a podcast for you, and whenever you want to interrupt it, you can interrupt it and ask clarifying questions or give your opinion, and those characters from Notebook LM, the podcast hosts, will respond in as if they're talking to you. And it is kind of, to me, the first time I heard Notebook LM, it was a little bit stiff. It didn't feel real, but I'm just going to share a snippet of it based on, you know, I had a look at a blog post that I wrote and then create their own podcast episode on that blog post. And when you listen to it, it's going to feel very human. There's a lot of uhs and ums and vocal fries and all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to share just a brief example from Notebook LM.
Okay, so You know, we've been talking a lot about AI and education lately. And you know, you sent me that article, A Continuum for Using AI in Schools by John Spencer.
Right.
It's really interesting because, like, you know, a lot of times it feels like this whole AI thing is so polarizing, you
So
know?
it's either you're for it or you're against it,
Yeah,
basically.
you know,
Yeah.
and it's like, you know, are you going to ban it? Are you going to embrace it? And it's like, well, hold on.
There's some middle ground in there, right?
There's a lot of middle ground. So we wanted to really kind of like dive deep into this article
Absolutely.
and talk about his continuum because it's really fascinating.
I think what's really interesting about it too is that it's coming from this this place of actual like on the ground teaching experience.
Right.
So John Spencer, he was a middle school teacher for a number of years, and now he's a professor working with pre-service teachers. And so he's really thinking about this, not just from an abstract standpoint, but really what does it look like in the classroom?
Yeah, what does it look like day to day? So, you know, one of the things that he talks about is this sort of like continuum of approaches to AI in the classroom.
Yes.
And he starts out with this idea of AI resistant, which, you know, when you first hear that, you're like, oh, that's the people who are like, no, AI, get that out of here.
Right.
But it's actually a lot more nuanced than that.
Okay, right. So that feels a little bit trippy. Am I the only one? I have no idea. But yeah, I mean, it's a great tool. I've actually used it when synthesizing multiple articles that I'm reading relating to research. And I love just the dynamic back and forth. And then it helps me figure out what to read later, or I read the articles first, and it's almost like a retrieval practice. Number five is to interview fictional historical figures. You know, step one, you choose your historical figures. Again, I highly recommend fictional ones. So we have like, you know, a woman from Athens, a woman from Sparta. Step two, develop deeper character profiles, then provide the prompt. Start the interview, ask follow-up questions, let the characters respond to each other, and then reflect on what you've learned. And so I love how it kind of makes history come alive. Number six, use AI as a simulator. This is where you might choose what's called a wicked problem. You set the scene, you meet the stakeholders, face your first decision, and then ask it to come up with unintended consequences, ripple effects. You're going to shift and adapt. And the more you do this sort of like the wicked problem concept as a simulator, the better it gets. This works really well in upper like high school classes, even college classes. Great for econ classes, entrepreneurial classes. I've actually used it myself in just thinking through some decision making that I've done, like what are some ways that people might view this or people might view that, or I find it really interesting. And part of why is newer forms of AI are starting to engage in what's called deeper reasoning. So like if you looked at a crossword puzzle and had AI do a crossword puzzle, say 3 months ago, it would get stuck because it would do like the first line and then the second line, and then it would mess up because they didn't fit together. Whereas now it's going to look at multiple approaches multiple times, but it's going to treat the crossword puzzle as a whole. And I think that's the key thing. Strategy number eight is error analysis and feedback loops. This is just basically using the prompt, I am a blank, I'm learning about blank. I'm going to submit a few assignments. I'd like you to analyze my answers and highlight errors, misconceptions, missing reasoning. It's basically similar to what I mentioned with the conceptual understanding, but this one's based on skills. And then you summarize feedback, ask for skill practice, ask it to grade your skill practice, take hand note and handwritten notes on that, and you're basically using it as this tutor for skills. Strategy number eight is metacognitive coaching companion. You're basically treating it as a coach. So you work on your own, you journal some reflections, and then you create a prompt where you say, you know, after journaling, I want you to help me with goal setting. I want you to help me with advice. I want you to help me figure out what I know, what I don't know, what I'm going to do next. And with goal setting, and really the goal that what we're aiming for here is treating the AI as this coach that helps students with metacognition. Strategy number nine is the Feynman style teach back. This is based on a strategy that Richard Feynman did. He's a famous, or he was, I should say, famous theoretical physicist, certainly connected to the development of the nuclear bomb, which I realize can be controversial, but also a well-known teacher, someone who really focused on what does it mean to teach science well. And this, to me, is based partly on a man named Chad Evans from Pennsylvania shared with me this idea of using AI for reciprocal teaching, where the AI gives you feedback or asks you questions that guides you to the truth. And so what you're doing is you're starting with a theory of your own, and then you say, my theory is blank, and then you get feedback on why your theory might be wrong or right, and you ask it to ask you questions that guide you closer and closer to success. And eventually, what you want to do is explain, you know, really clearly what your theory is and why it works, you know, why it's accurate. And I love this as just a way to delve into deeper learning, because I really think if you can explain a theory, that makes a difference, right? So it helps with that notion of teaching people how to teach. But I also love this because it promotes that productive struggle that we want to see. You know, you're not going to get your answers immediately. The final idea is to use AI as a peer feedback tool. And this is actually based on the 20-minute peer feedback process. And so step one is that you share your work with AI. You might say something like, here's a script for a podcast. Can you give me feedback on clarity, engagement, and structure? But first, can you give me follow-up questions? Then when I'm ready, I'll ask for feedback. And then you let it ask you follow-up questions. And then ask for 5 positives and 1 area of improvement. What that does is that helps you avoid the negativity bias, where you only fixate on the negatives. And then on your own, away from the AI, you summarize the feedback in your own words, and then you come up with your next steps. And you can repeat it if necessary. What I love about this is, again, it's built on asking for feedback. It's built on autonomy, agency, your own sense of like what you know and what you don't know and what you need to do next. So those are all some key ideas that you might want to consider. In the end, we're going to see a lot of new AI tools emerge. We're going to see a lot of new features. But I think it's really important that we ask ourselves, do these features lead to deeper learning or cognitive atrophy? And really, how do we use these tools in a way that will lead to deeper learning rather than cognitive atrophy? Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy it, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, Amazon, wherever it is? Just leave a review or click the little like button, whatever it is that you need to do there. And then also subscribe, because subscribing means that it's going to be in your feed automatically. And also, the other thing I want to say is, if you haven't done so already, check out spencereducation.com. And when you're there, if you go to any of my blog posts, if you go up to the menu, I'm going to be putting this up real soon on the menu line. Just click on the join the newsletter thing, and you will get my blog posts, my podcast, but also free resources that I'm giving away that are exclusive to just subscribers of the newsletter. Those will all be available in your inbox every single week. I aim for Thursdays. It's not always going to be there. But thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome. By the way, there's some bonus content today. This is sort of like the hidden track on old school CDs from like when I was in high school. So this is the bonus content. I shared with you a snippet of that podcast. I'm just going to share the whole thing. It's kind of wild to me. And I found it entertaining. Maybe you will too. Maybe you'll be like, this is weird. But sometimes weird is entertaining. Heck, I just finished Severance. Loved it. Season 2, phenomenal. One of my favorite season finales. But yeah, was that entertaining? You bet. Was that weird? Definitely. So maybe this is in that category of awesome but weird. I have no idea. But here we go. Here is that full podcast episode with two AI talking to each other. It's kind of cool, kind of different, kind of bizarre.
Okay, so, you know, we've been talking a lot about AI and education lately. And, you know, you sent me that article, A Continuum for Using AI in Schools by John Spencer. Right. It's really interesting because, like, you know, a lot of times it feels like this whole AI thing is so polarizing, you know?
So it's either you're for it or you're against it.
Yeah, you know, right. And it's like, you know, are you going to ban it? Are you going to embrace it? And it's like, hold on.
There's some middle ground in there, right?
There's a lot of middle ground. So we wanted to really kind of like dive deep into this article.
Absolutely.
And talk about his continuum because it's really fascinating.
I think what's really interesting about it too is that it's coming from this this place of actual like on the ground teaching experience.
Right.
So John Spencer, he was a middle school teacher for a number of years, and now he's a professor working with pre-service teachers. And so he's really thinking about this, not just from an abstract standpoint, but really, what does it look like in the classroom?
Yeah. What does it look like day to day? So, you know, one of the things that he talks about is this sort of like continuum of approaches to AI in the classroom.
Yes.
And he starts out with this idea of AI resistant, which, you know, when you first hear that, you're like, oh, that's the people who are like, no, AI, get that out of here.
Right.
But it's actually a lot more nuanced than that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And it's really important to clarify that AI resistant doesn't necessarily mean anti-technology or Luddites in the classroom.
Right.
But it's really more about a very conscious and deliberate choice to prioritize those kind of foundational human skills and those hands-on learning experiences.
Yeah, and he makes a really good point that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's kind of like this historical context here.
Right.
When new technologies come on the scene, you know, we tend to get very excited about all the promises.
Oh, absolutely. And we saw this with computers.
Yeah.
We saw it with the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, every time there's this new technology, there's this kind of rush to think it's going to completely transform education. And you know, he even cites Larry Cuban's work, you know, the book Oversold and Underused.
Right.
Which, you know, really looked at how technology has often been kind of overhyped in its promises and then underutilized in its actual implementation.
Right. And it doesn't quite live up to the hype.
Exactly. And so there's, I think that's part of where some of this resistance comes from, is that people have kind of seen this cycle before.
Right.
And they're a little bit more cautious.
Yeah, they're a little bit more cautious about, you know, jumping on the bandwagon.
Right.
Before we really know what the implications are.
Exactly.
And I think one of the other things that he talks about is that, you know, when it comes to AI resistant, it's not just about, you know, fear of technology, but it's also about these really important pedagogical concerns. You know, there's this concern about academic integrity. You know, if students are using AI to do all their work for them, are they actually learning? And then there's this idea of what he calls cognitive atrophy. You know, if we're not using our brains, if we're not, you know, engaging in those critical thinking skills, are we actually, you know, kind of weakening our own mental faculties?
That's a really interesting point. And I think that's something that a lot of people are grappling with, is that this idea of like, what skills are really essential for students to develop in a world where AI is going to be increasingly prevalent?
Right.
And so if AI can do a lot of the things that we've traditionally thought of as requiring higher order thinking skills, you know, does that mean that those skills are no longer important? Or does it mean that we need to redefine what those skills look like?
Yeah. And, you know, it also brings up that question of if AI is doing a lot of this stuff for us, are we losing something in terms of the human element
right.
of learning?
Absolutely. And that's really at the core of a lot of this, is this idea that, you know, education is not just about content delivery.
Yeah.
It's about human connection. It's about social emotional learning. It's about all these things that are very difficult to replicate with technology.
Right. And, you know, he gives some really good examples in the article about what this looks like in practice. So, you know, let's say you're doing project-based learning
okay.
in an AI-resistant classroom. What does that look like?
So, you know, it's really interesting because it goes back to a lot of these very, like, hands-on, tactile, you know, sort of old-school methods in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But very intentionally. So, you know, he talks about students using these things called boost books, which are essentially like these physical notebooks where they're sketching out their ideas, they're taking notes, they're doing all their brainstorming.
Yeah, like almost like bullet journaling.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a very personalized, yeah. you know, kind of tangible record of their thinking process. And he talks about working with actual articles, you know, physical copies of things. So rather than just reading everything online, having that experience of interacting with the physical text.
Right, because it's different. Like, you know, I don't know about you, but like when I read something online, it's like in one eye and out the other. But right. when I have a book and I'm underlining and I'm writing notes, I'm way more engaged with the material.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's something about that tactile experience of like holding a book, turning the pages, you know, making those physical annotations that really helps with comprehension and retention.
Yeah. And then, you know, he talks about, you know, in this AI resistant PBL classroom, students might be, you know, using sticky notes to brainstorm ideas. They might be sketching out their designs. They might be building prototypes from recycled materials, you know, really emphasizing that hands-on creation.
And that collaboration too, right? Like working together in person around a table.
Yeah.
You know, bouncing ideas off of each other.
Yeah, and actually talking to each other.
Exactly.
Not just, you know, texting or chatting.
Yeah.
And it's not just PBL. I mean, he talks about this in terms of like, you know, class discussions.
Yeah.
So, you know, in an AI-resistant classroom, you might see a really good old-fashioned Socratic seminar where students are sitting in a circle.
With their annotated texts.
Yeah, they've got their, you know, dog-eared books, you know, they've got their highlighters out, and they're actually having a conversation with each other.
And really engaging deeply with the text and with each other's ideas.
Yeah, and like, I think that's a really important point because, you know, there's so much emphasis these days on, you know, digital tools for collaboration.
Right.
And it's like, well, you know, sometimes the best collaboration is just sitting down and having a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's something that often gets lost is that those kind of informal, organic conversations are where a lot of the really deep learning happens.
Right. And, you know, even when it comes to student writing, you know, which you would think would be kind of like the prime area where AI could come in and just, you know, take over the whole thing.
Right.
But he talks about how even in student writing, there's a way to approach it from an AI resistant perspective.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the key there is really thinking about what are those uniquely human qualities that we want to cultivate in our students' writing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he talks about things like curiosity, empathy, context, and voice.
Right.
You know, really emphasizing the individual student's perspective and their ability to connect with the material in a meaningful way.
Yeah. So instead of giving them a generic essay prompt, you know, you might give them something that's a little bit more open-ended, a little bit more personal.
Right.
You know, like, you know, connect a theme from The Great Gatsby to your own life.
Yeah. Or write a dialogue from the perspective of a character that you really disagree with.
Yeah. And try to understand where they're coming from and really kind of tap into that human element.
Yeah. And he even talks about valuing things like sketch notes and concept maps and handwritten work, you know, really kind of embracing those more analog approaches.
Yeah. Cause it's like, you know, we get so caught up in like, you know, everything has to be typed and digital, but there's something about the process of like physically writing something down that helps you think differently.
Yeah. And, you know, there's research to support that, that there's a different kind of cognitive processing that happens when you're writing by hand.
And, you know, even something like choice-based learning, which, you know, again, you might think, well, that's all about, you know, digital tools and personalized learning platforms.
Right.
He talks about how even choice-based learning can be AI resistant.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the key there is that the choices are being made by the students and by the teacher, not by an algorithm.
Right.
So, you know, you might have those classic Montessori style learning centers where students are choosing which activities they want to engage with.
Right.
Or you might have a tic-tac-toe board with different learning activities outlined on paper and students can choose which ones they want to do. Or, you know, even just dedicated time for silent reading with an actual physical book.
Right.
Where students are choosing what they want to read.
And I love that example he gives about the what can you do with this?
Yeah.
Math problems. Where you just give students like a set of manipulatives or a, you know, a problem that's open-ended and they have to figure out like how to approach it without any kind of, you know, step-by-step instructions or, you know, AI telling them what to do.
Exactly. It's really about fostering that kind of problem-solving mindset and that creative thinking.
So, you know, it's interesting because I think the AI-resistant approach, it's not about rejecting technology altogether.
Right.
It's about being very intentional about when and how you use it and really prioritizing those human-centered approaches.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's important to note that even within a classroom that's generally AI resistant, there might be times when technology is used strategically and purposefully.
Right.
You know, maybe you're showing a video clip or you're using a simulation for a specific purpose, but it's not the dominant mode of learning.
Right. It's not like every kid has a device in their hand all day long.
Exactly.
So that's AI resistant, you know, that's kind of one end of the spectrum. Then he moves into AI assisted. And that sounds a little bit more like, okay, AI is coming in to help, but it's still primarily, you know, behind the scenes.
Right. It's more on the back end. And it's really about using AI to streamline the workload for teachers and to make certain tasks more feasible.
So like, give me some examples of that. Like, how are teachers using AI in an AI-assisted classroom?
So, you know, one example is creating rubrics.
Okay.
You know, rubrics can be very time-consuming to create. And so there are AI tools now that can help teachers generate initial drafts of rubrics based on the learning objectives and the criteria. Okay. And then the teacher can go in and refine those and make sure that they're aligned with their specific needs.
So it's not like the AI is spitting out the rubric and the teacher is just like, oh, great, here you go.
No, no, it's really about using it as a starting point.
Yeah, as a tool.
Yeah.
Okay, what else?
Another example is designing sentence stems.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of times students need a little bit of support with getting started with their writing or with structuring their sentences.
Right.
And so AI can be used to generate a variety of different sentence stems that students can choose from or that teachers can provide as examples.
Okay, so it's like almost like giving them, you know, some training wheels.
Yeah, exactly.
To get started.
But then they can kind of take off on their own.
Right.
Another example is generating lesson ideas.
Okay.
So, you know, teachers are always looking for new and creative ways to engage their students.
Yeah, we spend hours on Pinterest and pay teachers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so AI can be used to kind of brainstorm different ideas based on the topic or the learning objectives.
Okay.
And then the teacher can kind of sift through those and see if there's anything that sparks their interest or that they can adapt for their own classroom.
So it's like having, you know, a brainstorming partner.
Yeah, in a way.
Okay. And what about data analysis?
Yeah. So AI can also be used to analyze student data and to look for patterns and trends. And this can be really helpful for teachers in terms of identifying areas where students might need additional support or where they might need to differentiate their instruction.
Okay, so it's like it's taking all that data that we collect anyway
right.
and actually making it useful.
Exactly, making it actionable.
Okay.
So those are just a few examples of how AI can be used in an AI-assisted classroom.
Okay, so it's really about, like you said, streamlining the teacher's workload and freeing up their time so that they can spend more time with students.
Right.
Okay, so, you know, we talked about AI resistant, we talked about AI assisted. Now he moves into AI integrated.
Yes.
And this sounds a little bit more like, okay, AI is actually coming into the classroom now.
Right. It's becoming more of a direct part of the learning process.
Yeah, it's not just helping the teacher behind the scenes, it's actually being used by the students.
Exactly.
So what does that look like?
So this is where, you know, both teachers and students are leveraging AI tools in a very intentional and ethical way. And it's really driven by those learning goals.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just about using AI for the sake of using AI.
Right.
It's about using AI to enhance those learning outcomes.
Okay.
So, you know, one example is using AI for those kind of time-consuming, repetitive tasks that don't necessarily require a lot of higher-order thinking.
Right.
So, for example, students might use AI to add jump cuts to a video that they're creating.
Okay.
Or they might use AI to generate basic images for a presentation.
Okay. So, like, kind of the stuff that would take them forever to do manually, but it's not really where they're doing their deep thinking.
Right.
Okay.
But it goes beyond that. You know, AI can also be used as what he calls a thought partner for students.
A thought partner. That's interesting.
Yeah. So what does that mean?
I don't know. You tell me.
So, you know, one example is students using AI chatbots to build their background knowledge on a topic.
Okay.
So they can ask the chatbot questions, get immediate responses, kind of do some exploration before they dive into the deeper learning.
Okay. So it's like almost like having, you know, a little expert in their pocket.
Yeah, in a way.
Okay.
Another example is using AI to get feedback on their writing.
Okay.
So, you know, there are AI tools now that can provide feedback on things like clarity, grammar, argumentation.
So, like, beyond just, like, spell check and grammar check.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's more about the content and the structure of the writing.
Okay.
And then another really interesting example is using AI to support those executive functioning skills.
Okay.
So, you know, things like estimating how much time a task is going to take, breaking down a complex project into smaller steps, reflecting on their learning process.
So for students who maybe struggle with organization and time management,
right.
AI can kind of help them with that.
Exactly. And, wow. you know, this can be especially helpful for students with learning disabilities or ADHD.
Right.
Who might need that extra support.
Okay. So let's talk about how this looks in practice. So, you know, you talked about PBL before.
Yes.
How would AI integrated PBL be different from AI assisted PBL?
So, you know, teachers might still be using AI on that back end for some of those tasks we talked about.
Okay.
But now you as a student are also interacting with AI throughout the project lifecycle.
Okay.
So, you know, during the initial inquiry phase, you might be using chatbots to explore foundational concepts
mm-hmm.
to gather information.
Right.
When you're doing your research, you might be using AI tools to adjust the reading level of a complex article or to get a quick summary of a lengthy text.
Oh.
If your project involves collecting and analyzing data, AI can help you with visualization and identifying patterns.
Okay.
And then during the brainstorming and ideation stages, AI could act as an additional brainstorming partner.
Okay.
Or it could even help you anticipate potential problems through those pre-mortem exercises.
Pre-mortem, what is that?
So a pre-mortem is basically where you kind of imagine that your project has failed.
Okay.
And then you think about all the reasons why it might have failed.
Okay.
And this helps you to kind of identify potential pitfalls in advance and to come up with strategies for avoiding them.
Okay, so it's like, you know, instead of waiting till the project crashes and burns,
right.
you're kind of like planning for failure in advance.
Exactly.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then, you know, you could also use AI for feedback on your work.
Okay.
For managing the various tasks involved in the project.
Okay, so it's really like a much more integrated role for AI throughout the entire project.
Yeah.
Okay, so what about writing?
Yes.
You know, we talked about AI-resistant writing before. How is AI-integrated writing different?
So in AI-integrated writing, you might be using a chatbot to clarify your understanding of a key concept from a text before you even start writing.
Okay.
You might be using it as a sounding board to discuss your initial ideas.
Okay.
Or as a reflection partner after you finish a draft.
Okay.
You might even compare your own outline for an essay with one that's generated by AI
okay.
to see if you've missed any key areas.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then, you know, while the primary writing would still be yours, you might experiment with using AI to generate a single paragraph on a specific point as a starting point for significant revision.
Okay, so it's not like you're just taking the AI's writing and turning it in as your own.
No, it's really about using it as a tool to help you improve your own writing.
Okay.
To kind of push your thinking further.
Okay.
To kind of explore different possibilities.
Okay, so what about class discussions?
Yeah.
You know, how does AI integration change how discussions happen in the classroom?
So AI can actually facilitate even richer discussions.
Really?
Yeah, imagine an AI tool that's providing real-time sentence stems on a shared screen.
Okay.
To help students articulate their thoughts more clearly during a class debate.
Okay.
Or imagine using an AI-powered fact-checking tool like ConsenSys.
Right.
To quickly verify information that's being discussed during a Socratic seminar.
Okay.
And then, you know, he also suggests the possibility of small group discussions where a chatbot is actually a participant in the discussion.
Wow.
Yeah. So maybe the chatbot is role-playing a historical figure.
Okay.
And answering students' questions.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Or maybe the chatbot is posing questions to the students to kind of test their understanding of different viewpoints.
So it's like adding another dimension to the discussion.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, for choice-based learning in an AI-integrated classroom, the big shift is really towards more personalized learning.
Okay.
So instead of just a static menu of options that's created by the teacher,
right.
AI can be used to suggest resources and learning pathways that are more tailored to your individual needs,
okay.
your interests, your learning style.
So it's kind of like taking that choice-based learning to the next level.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we've gone from AI-resistant to AI-assisted to AI-integrated. Okay. And now he takes us to the final frontier, AI-driven.
Yes, this is the big one.
This is the big one. So this sounds like a really fundamental shift in how we think about education.
It really is. And, you know, he draws a parallel to the redefinition level of the SAMR model.
Okay.
Where technology is not just enhancing or modifying what we're already doing, but it's actually creating entirely new possibilities for learning.
Okay.
That weren't even conceivable before.
So give me an example of that.
Okay. So, you know, one example might be in STEM fields.
Okay.
Where you're using AI to run incredibly complex simulations to tackle problems that would be impossible to explore through traditional methods.
Okay.
Or, you know, imagine combining virtual reality with AI to create incredibly detailed models in engineering or simulated scientific instruments that students can interact with.
Wow.
Yeah. Or, you know, fully immersive VR field trips to historical sites where the AI is actually responding to students' questions and guiding their exploration.
So it's really like taking learning beyond the classroom walls.
Yeah, exactly.
And beyond the limits of what we can do in the physical world.
Right.
Okay, so what about something like PBL?
Yeah.
How would AI-driven PBL be different?
So in AI-driven PBL, you might have an AI chatbot that's actually an active member of your project group.
Really?
Yeah, maybe the chatbot is acting as a coach or a project manager or even offering specialized expertise.
So it's like having another team member.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a bot.
It's a bot.
Okay.
You might be using AI to analyze massive data sets
mm-hmm.
and identify subtle trends that would be invisible to human analysis.
Okay.
And then AI could become an ongoing co-creation tool.
Okay.
For various forms of media.
Okay.
So whether it's generating initial lines of code.
Okay.
Creating the first draft of a video. Producing a base image.
Okay.
Drafting a piece of text.
Okay.
Students would then take that AI-generated output and they would modify it and refine it.
Okay.
Build upon it with their own creative input and critical thinking.
So it's not just like the AI is doing the work for them.
No, no. It's really about using the AI as a starting point.
Yeah, a jumping off point.
Yeah. And then, you know, for writing, he gives this really interesting example of comparing AI to musical tools like drum machines and synthesizers.
Okay.
You know, so the idea is that AI could potentially unlock entirely new forms of composition and creative expression.
Okay.
You know, while he really emphasizes the foundational importance of learning to write effectively from scratch, he also sees this potential for AI-generated text to serve as a springboard.
Okay.
For entirely new kinds of creative work.
Okay.
Where students are taking that initial, maybe somewhat generic output.
Right.
And they're infusing it with their own unique voice, their own context, their own artistry.
Okay. So it's like taking that raw material that the AI produces.
Yes.
And then shaping it into something that's really their own.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then, you know, for choice-based learning in an AI-driven classroom, this is where we get to that fully adaptive learning experience.
Okay.
So imagine a system where AI is dynamically generating learning content.
Oh, okay.
It's answering students' specific questions in real time.
Wow.
It's providing follow-up questions that are tailored precisely to their current understanding and their interests.
Okay.
You know, this AI could adapt to their curiosity.
Okay.
Their energy levels, their motivation, even the learning strategies that they find most effective.
So it's really like a completely personalized educational journey.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's kind of the vision for AI-driven education.
So, you know, one of the things that I really appreciate about this continuum is that it's not about saying, like, this is the right way to do it and this is the wrong way to do it.
Right.
It's really about acknowledging that there are all these different approaches.
Yes.
And that what might work in one context might not work in another context.
Absolutely.
And that it's really important to have these conversations
yes.
with all the stakeholders.
And students, teachers, administrators, the community experts in the field.
To figure out like what makes sense for your particular school or your particular classroom.
Right. And, you know, I think one of the things that he emphasizes is that it's not necessarily about choosing one approach for the whole school.
Okay.
Or even for a whole course.
Right.
You know, you might shift between these different approaches depending on the content.
Okay.
The age of the students.
Yes.
The specific learning goals.
Okay.
So, you know, you might have a school that's generally AI resistant, but then within certain classes or certain activities,
yep.
they might dip into those other approaches.
Okay.
And he tells this really interesting story about a workshop that he did with a group of university faculty.
Okay.
And, you know, there was this wide range of opinions about AI integration.
Okay.
And it really sparked a lot of debate about, you know, consistency versus flexibility.
Right.
You know, some faculty were really concerned about the potential for this kind of fragmented and confusing experience for students.
Yeah.
If different departments or even individual teachers were adopting wildly different approaches.
Right. I can imagine how that would be confusing for a student.
Yeah. You know, one minute you're in a class that's using AI-driven simulations, the next minute you're in a class where you're taking a Blue Book exam. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there was this real tension there between this desire for consistency.
Right.
And this recognition that, you know, in this rapidly evolving environment, maybe flexibility is the policy.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we need to be open to different approaches and different ways of using this technology.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, that mirrors the real world in a lot of ways. Like, right. When you get out of school, there's not going to be one right way to do things.
Right.
You're going to have to be adaptable.
You're going to have to navigate different expectations, different technological landscapes, different ways of working.
So maybe that's something that we need to start teaching students, you know, how to be flexible.
How to be adaptable.
How to navigate these different emotions.
Right.
So, you know, I think that's one of the things that I really take away from this article is that, you know, this is not a simple question.
Absolutely not.
There's no easy answer.
It's a really complex issue.
Yeah. And it's going to require a lot of thoughtful discussion and collaboration to figure out what makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, I think he concludes by saying that, you know, while this question of how to approach AI feels incredibly timely and relevant right now.
Right.
It's also, in a way, a timeless question.
Yeah.
You know, it's this constant process of negotiating between new innovations and established educational practices.
Yeah, it's like, you know, every time a new technology comes along, we have to kind of grapple with this all over again.
Absolutely.
So, you know, just to recap for our listeners, we've talked about four different approaches to using AI in schools.
Mm-hmm.
AI resistant, AI assisted, AI integrated, and AI driven.
Right.
And, you know, the key takeaway here is that there's no one right answer.
It really depends on the context, the goals, the ethical considerations.
Yeah. And, you know, for you, our listener, we want to leave you with this question to think about.
Okay.
How might understanding these different levels of AI integration empower you to critically evaluate the role of technology, not just in education, but in all areas of your life and your work?
Okay.
What are the potential benefits and drawbacks of each approach?
Okay.
In different contexts beyond the classroom?
Okay.
No, we're not going to give you the answers here.
Right.
But we want to encourage you to think critically about these issues and to engage in these conversations.
With your colleagues, with your friends, with your family.
Because this is something that's going to affect all of us.
Absolutely.
And if you're interested in learning more about this topic, John Spencer has a great free ebook called A Beginner's Guide to Artificial Intelligence in Education.
Yes.
You can find it on his website, spencereducation.com.
And you can also find a lot of other great resources on his website, articles, videos, podcasts.
So definitely check that out.
Yeah.
And thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
See you next time.
Bye.